Hello and welcome to another episode of I Am The Egg Pod, hosted by me, Chris Shaw. You can find me on Twitter as @ChrisShawEditor. The Egg Pods will take a jaunty stroll through Pepperland, discussing the Beatles and solo Beatle albums with a potpourri of delicious guests. In this episode, I'm joined by singer, songwriter, comedian, actor, impressionist. Have I missed anything
else? Shut up.
I've got Grumpy Old Woman on here, but yeah. That seems wrong.
Well, that was the name of the tour, so.
So, yeah, we have Kate Robbins.
That's me.
Hello, Kate.
Hello.
And Kate can be found on Twitter as @KateRobbins.
That's me.
When God was handing out talents, the Robbins family kind of got quite a bit of it, didn't
well,
they?
None of us have had a proper job, you know. We're all quite sort of talented at little things. My mum being from the McCartney clan, so there is that music on her side. And my dad's side, we're all very sort of artistic and musical. So, yeah, I couldn't avoid it genetically, really.
And I gather you are working on a musical as we speak.
Yes, I'm working on a jukebox musical, actually, which, as you know, means using songs that have already been written. It is Northern-based. I won't go any further than to say I think your Beatles fans will be interested.
Wow, you heard it here first. Finally an exclusive on the Egg Pod.
Yeah.
As Paul McCartney's cousin and...
Second cousin. He and my mum, let me just explain the relationship.
Yes.
Right, so Paul's dad was Jim McCartney.
Jim
Mack. Yeah. And my mum's mum was Annie McCartney, and they were brother and sister.
Okay.
So Jim was my great uncle. My grandmother, Annie McCartney, was my mum's mum. So my mother used to, you know, babysit for Paul and Mike when... They were quite young because they lost their mum when they were quite young lads. So all the family was sort of brought in to babysit, as in large families often, you know, are. And, I make the joke that Paul McCartney doesn't go around bragging about being my cousin. He got where he is from his own talent.
Somehow he battled through.
He did, yeah. But yeah, so I always point that out. That I'm not first cousins, I'm second cousin, yeah.
Yeah. So was there a time when you were aware... that your second cousin, Paul, was Paul McCartney?
Well, the thing is, you've got to remember, I only remember him from being a famous person. So my first memories of him were when I was probably, let's see, I was born in 58. So I was aware of him coming around to our house and playing his guitar with John Lennon and mum being all happy for them because they'd signed a record deal. But I didn't know what that was. I just knew that there was this fun cousin in the house singing and playing. And then, of course, you know, growing up in Liverpool, going to school, everybody pretended that they were related to one of the Beatles. So I was just one of many people who sounded like a liar when I said, well, actually, I am related to Paul McCartney. Oh, yeah, sure, you know. Yeah. So nobody believed you. So you didn't bother telling anyone, really. But I was lucky enough to, as an 11-year-old in 1969, I was in London with my dad and my brother Ted, who's 3 years older than me, and we got taken by Paul. We were staying at Paul's house in St. John's Wood in NW8, and we were taken to Abbey Road Studios, and I was very excited because I knew that was special. Went in and met, you know, George Martin, met all the Beatles. I'd met John Lennon before, but I'd never met George and I'd never met Ringo. I was so excited. And Yoko Ono was a bit frightening. She was wearing a big fur coat. And we were taken down the steps of the big studio. Is it Studio 2 or 1? I can't remember the name, which studio it is. I've recorded in there since a few times. And yes, I knew that it was kind of, I didn't know it was such a big event, but I knew it was something very special because I was 11 and I was aware that it was amazing. And John Lennon gave us some chocolates and chatted to us, and me and Ted were very, very pleased with ourselves. And they were recording a song that I remembered for years afterwards called I'm Not Guilty, which is a George Harrison song.
Yes. So you would have been going in during the White Album sessions then?
I don't know what it was. What was it? Was
not
it?
Guilty. Yeah, that was recorded during...
Like, I'm not guilty. That's all I remember.
Yes.
Yeah, I've sort of heard it since. And it's on the anthology, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's from the double White Album session, is it?
It is, yeah. Right. So your memory of that is such a positive, because the sessions for that album, they were fraught with tension.
Yes, and I sort of... Well, I was aware that John and Paul got on great, but there was, I don't know. I mean, to me, it was just exciting being, you know, seeing Yoko Ono was very exciting to me, and meeting Ringo was exciting, because I'd only met the, John and Paul before. So I knew it was something special. And of course, now my kids think it's really cool that I met John Lennon, you know, it's like, wow, they don't give a damn about Paul McCartney. Yeah. They just go, wow, you met John Lennon.
That's brilliant. But the album that you've actually chosen is Abbey Road.
Yeah.
Why did you pick this particular album?
Because I'd actually been to the Abbey Road studios.
Yeah.
And Paul lives just in a street not far from there. I've had a flat on Abbey Road since. Abbey Road's quite a big part of my life. I've lived there. I've been there as a child. Yeah, it means quite a lot to me, yeah. And when you're cursing people for crossing the zebra crossing because you can't get past in your car, I tend to sort of go, do you know what? I'm related to somebody who's causing this chaos. Yeah.
Good job they didn't do on the M25. The M25 had been around then.
Yeah. It didn't have the same ring as an album title, does it?
So track one, Come Together.
He come on black top, he come grooving up slowly. He got juju eyeball, he want holy roller. Well, you know, I remember us listening to it when, you know, we had our free copy given to us. And I remember thinking, what's it all about? I don't understand the words.
Timothy Leary asked him to do this as a campaign song. And as you say, if somebody
certainly
gave
sounds,
you that...
Yeah, it certainly sounds like the lyrics are on acid. But I love the... That rhythm at the beginning is fantastic.
Basically, we can just have you singing the whole album. Forget the podcast.
I don't like it when you hear covers of that song.
Yeah, they never quite get there.
It doesn't quite happen. Mm. Only John Lennon can get away with it, really.
Yeah.
It's not one of those, it's not a classic song to cover, I don't think.
No.
Come together, dun, 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 right now, over me, dun, 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 dun. Great.
Yeah. You Can't Catch Me was the original Chuck Berry song that was inspired. It's got the Here Come Old Flat Top, but it's got a similar phrasing throughout the song. And the music publisher Morris Levy, who owned the rights to the Chuck Berry song, tried to sue John.
I didn't know
70s.
That. Really?
Yeah. Part of the agreement that they came up with was John would record You Can't Catch Me, which he put on the rock and roll album.
Ah.
So his version of his own version of a play.
But if you're going to start saying people are plagiarising using 12-bar blues sequences,
exactly.
Then there's so many songs that would
Where
be.
Where do you begin?
Yes.
Let's end. Thank you.
I think Something is the greatest Beatles song that George wrote, that of George's compositions. For me, it was the first time I really liked one of his compositions, because I did tend to sort of, as a kid, listen to the other tracks. I never listened to ones that Ringo sang, and I never really gave that much time and attention to George's tracks. I do now as an adult, but as a kid I was more interested in the Lennon McCartney ones. I don't know why, but I thought this was beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's been horribly covered by people. I don't like the way Shirley Bassey actually kills him. Something with him moves. I try to be like, not a lover. It's horrible. Stop it. It's a beautiful Beatles song.
Impressive.
But I don't like it. So yeah. It is a lovely, lovely song. And it was the first time I was aware of George's absolute brilliance as a writer, really.
Mm. Well, I think John and Paul were annoyed because didn't Frank Sinatra call it the greatest ever Lennon McCartney song?
He did, that's right.
Oh, man, really? But, yeah, and Paul's bass on that track is just phenomenal. It's kind of its own little counter-melody going on.
It is, yes. It is a nice little counter-melody, you're right.
Yeah. A lot of George's songs prior to that had been Cynical, Taxman, Bloody Taxman. And
I wonder what percentage of tax they were paying when he wrote Taxman.
Ridiculously high.
Was it? Was it like sort of 70, 80%?
I think it was more than that, wasn't it? It was insane. Yeah.
No wonder they wrote a song about it.
Maxwell's Silver Hammer.
Oh, brilliant song. Absolutely brilliant. You don't get many people covering this song because it is about death. About murdering somebody with a silver hammer. Mm. But as far as construction of songs go, I think it's absolutely brilliant. There's only one bit in it that I never understood, and I do need to ask Paul. Why in the verse when he says, she tells Max to stay when the class has gone away, so he waits behind. Writing 50 times, I must not be so, oh, oh, oh. Now, I've always wondered, why doesn't he sing so unkind to rhyme with behind? But he doesn't, he just goes so, oh, 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 I must not be so what?
I know.
Bit of a mystery. But I do think, as a song and structure-wise, it's very good, very, very clever. It would have been a good sort of sitcom theme tune.
Mm, yes, with Terry and June in it.
With Terry Maxwell, so, yeah.
With Terry Scott with an axe.
Bang, bang, Maxwell Silver Hammer came down upon her head. Ba-do-ba-do-do. Bang, bang, Maxwell Silver Hammer made sure that she was dead. And as I say, there's not many people who would cover that song, really, because it is about killing somebody with a hammer. But there we are, each to their own.
With no remorse at all. It's just another day for Maxwell.
Yeah. Very different for the Beatles to put something like that. I mean, they always were different when they did... You know, Sergeant Pepper, they wrote songs that were just so different for the time. But I think that was typical Paul bringing in his sort of, in visualising himself as a cabaret artist. He said the furthest he could see himself when he was older was just doing cabaret. You know, when he wrote When I'm 64, he only envisaged himself on a stage in a cabaret club in his 40s, maybe singing songs like When I'm 64. You know, he didn't really know he was going to be so successful. Yeah. And so maybe Maxwell Silver Hammer, he imagined himself, I don't know, in some sort of theatrical musical or something, I don't know.
I think they mentioned it in 63, they were talking about doing a musical. Mm. And there was an interview with Lennon in the 70s. It was, what the hell am I going to do now?
What am I going to do now, yeah.
Yeah, and he was thinking Vegas and that kind of thing.
Paul was sheep farming in Scotland.
Yeah, with hindsight, it's a lot easier just to say, don't worry, boys, it's going to be all right.
Yes.
Paul's brilliant at writing character songs. In... things like Let 'Em In, where he's mentioning Auntie Gin.
Yeah.
There must be a few songs where you're recognising, hang on, I know that person.
Well, I think I always thought, and Paul kind of nodded to it once, that Lady Madonna was about my mum. You know, sort of lots of kids and not much money and, you know, struggling a bit. I do kind of think of that. Certainly in Let 'Em In, Sister Susie was the joke name that we used to call Auntie Mill, who was Auntie Gin's sister. She was the older sister. And we used to go, hello, is that you, Millie? And she'd go, it's Sister Susie here. It was just a little joke thing. But so when we went to see, I remember we went to see Wings playing. And sorry to say Wings on a Beatles podcast.
It's loud. It's loud.
Paul changed the words to Let 'Em In to, you know, Cousin Betty, da-da-da, because she was in the audience. And I remember my little sister Amy turned around going, that's my mummy. You know, so he was good at changing the names, knowing who was in the audience.
Paul's next song, Oh Darling, which is a rip-roaring, blistering vocal, which he used to get in early practice.
Yeah, I love that. I love his voice on that, because it's very Little Richard, isn't it, type thing, when he really pushes his voice to the extreme. I really like that side of Paul's voice. That's just a classic sort of, what do you call it, 6/8, the time signature? Oh, darling, I'd call that 6/8. Yeah, it's just a classic sort of rocker sort of song, isn't
John
it?
Was very complimentary, despite there was a few arguments between John and Paul when they split up, but John had a very backhanded compliment saying, I love the song, although I thought it was more my style than his. He wrote it, so what the hell, he's going to sing it. If he'd had any sense, he should have let me sing it.
I can't help thinking he's kind of right there. It would have been great with a Lennon vocal on it, wouldn't it?
On the anthology CD, there's them jamming it, and John takes over a vocal, but it's very kind of half-hearted. In fact, no, it's when his divorce papers came through for Cynthia while they were practising Oh Darling. Right. It's all on the anthology, and then he starts singing about, I'm getting divorced, to the tune of Oh Darling.
Oh,
it's
right. Kind of, I must listen to that.
Yeah, bizarre. I don't think he really pushed it that hard for since the sort of Long Tall Sally.
No, back in it's a great song, though, yeah.
Beatlemania. And then Ringo, Octopus's Garden.
Yeah, I'm not mad on that. Dropped. I'm not mad on that song.
Really?
No.
It's Ringo.
Yeah, I'm just not mad on the song because there's some harmonies on it that annoy me. They do a three-part harmony. It doesn't kind of work. I love the I'd like to be under the sea. I like the opening and then Octopus's Garden in the shade. I like the sort of setup. It's like for a kid's TV program, isn't it?
Yeah.
The backing vocals are great. Let's just say that.
Moving on. I Want You, She's So Heavy.
Whoa,
it's
this
kind
song.
Of jumping from a light-hearted TV show to a obsessional.
Yeah, and
Twin
of course,
Peaks film.
Heavy, the word heavy being used in the sort of, in the hippie sort of way, you know, meaning somebody's very heavy, man, you know, like a bit serious. Nothing to do with weight. Nothing to do with being a plus-size model. Yeah, I just love that. I love all the different bits to it.
Yes.
It's like little sections, aren't there? Mm. Yeah, great song. That's a Lennon one, isn't it?
Yeah. It is, yeah.
I want you so bad. And I like the way the guitar copies the vocal line. Yeah. I want you. Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, and that's the entire lyrics for the whole song. Just
it's blues,
bounce.
Isn't it, really? Yeah. But then it's got that da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da,
pull the space on this.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. So I was listening to it last night. It's, as I say, it's got different sections to it that as an adult now I appreciate more. I think as a young girl enjoying it, I didn't probably enjoy it as much as I do now. It's not an immediate song, is it?
Not at all, no. Especially the 4 minute fade out of.
Yes. And of course, you know, when I was young, I hadn't had a drink. It's nicer to listen to with a drink, I think, now. Because you sort of relax as you're listening to it. So, yeah.
And it's longer, so you can have more drink.
Yes,
as well,
exactly. Which is always good.
Old vinyl people out there, and there's a few of us still here, we're turning over to side two. I'd throw it out there, I'd say this is probably the best side two ever made.
Yeah.
Starting with another George one, Here Comes the Sun.
Yeah. Well, I know I said something was the best one he'd ever written.
But on side one.
On side one. Can I put Here Comes the Sun along with it?
Yeah.
No, I still prefer Something, but yeah, beautiful song, fantastic song. Song of hope, isn't it? It's not just about the sun, it's about, you know, everything's going to be okay kind of thing. Mm. Yeah, great song.
Particularly with all the wrangles going on with Alan Klein and Apple and all the business deals. It was just
horrendous, yeah.
Wasn't it Eric Clapton's house and they just strumbled away?
Well, the whole thing that, you know, that George and Eric sort of got into, without going into it on this podcast, but, you know, there was a lot of complications there in the relationships, as you know. So it can't have been easy, can it? Mm. Can't have been easy at all.
Compositionally, it's another one of him sort of playing around in a D chord, similar to If I Needed Someone,
based
around the D chord. Do-do-do-do-do-do, you know.
Eric Clapton had such a great influence on George's playing, there's no doubt about that.
Onto side two and straight into John's Because, which is
beautiful,
and back to the old three-part harmonies that they used to do on This Boy and Yes It Is.
Yeah, lovely. But I always think of Because as I think it might be one of those where it really was quite 50-50 in the writing. I know it's a John Lennon song because he does the main vocal, but it's very McCartney-esque in the chords as well. In places.
There's rumours that it was John was listening to Yoko playing Moonlight Sonata on the piano, and he said, "Can you play it backwards?" Which she did, and he says, "I've never checked it out. I might have to give it a go." But they are pretty well the chords of Because.
Oh, so really?
Apparently.
Let me think
John,
about that for a minute. The Moonlight Sonata. Yeah, I can play that backwards. I can see that sort of working. Interesting. Mm. Hey, the things you learn on these podcasts, eh?
I know. I'm going to try it. I'm going to try it and I'll upload it now.
Wow.
And then we move on to one of the medleys, You Never Give Me Your Money.
Beautiful. I remember Paul playing this in our house on the Wirral when we lived in Bebbington. And he came and played it on the piano. And my mum said, "Oh, that's nice. What's that, dear?" And he said, "It's just a new tune." And showed me the chords because I was playing the piano from the age of six. And I've always loved that song. Amazing, beautiful. And when I went to have formal lessons, you know, with a proper concert pianist, she was impressed with me playing that. She said, "What can you play?" And I said, "Well, I can play by ear." And I played that to her. And she said, "Oh, play it for all my grade 8 students, would you, when they come in? And I had to play it in front of loads of people. And I remember thinking, well, what I'm doing is really easy, but, you know, grade 8 is really difficult. But actually, it is quite a nice, complex sort of little piano piece to learn. It's really nice.
Yeah.
It's really lovely to play.
So you learnt by ear as well?
Well, I did both. I was trained, and I did do my exams, and I got up to grade 7. Never took 7, though. Took 6. And I always played by ear as well, because I was playing in bands from the age of 13, 14. So, yeah, all the Beatles stuff was obviously what I started off with, but then I got into other stuff, you know, Carol King and all that.
A beautiful song from Horrendous Business Wrangles. So Paul could create a beautiful song from something like that.
Yeah.
And then you've got all the different sections, another boogie-woogie section.
And I don't think we realised when we were young that what it was about. You never give me your money. I thought it was a love song, just with a funny lyric to a girl saying, you never give me your money. But, you know, obviously realising years later that it was a fiscal conundrum.
Very eloquently put. Oh. And then the ending, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
All good children go to heaven.
Which was kind of appropriated, I think is the right word, by Elvis Costello on, have you heard Party Girl?
Yes, that's right, it was.
Right on the end of that.
Ooh. It's
very similar.
Probably you know your stuff, don't you?
It's a tribute rather than anything legal. So as that fades out, fading in, we get the bells and chimes and the sort of albatrossy Fleetwood Mac-y feel of Sun King.
Oh, yes. Here comes the Sun King. Oh, yeah. Now, the vocals on that are very rich, aren't they? And harmonies are lovely. I'd forgotten about that track. Here comes the Sun King. A lot about sun, isn't there? And hadn't really thought about that before. But there's two references. Sun. Yeah, two song titles with sun in them.
Mm. And Here Comes the Sun King.
Mm.
And it fades out with the COD Spanish Italian
Cristo
Labrigado.
Oh, yes.
Just made up words.
Yeah, made up Spanish stroke Italian, isn't it?
Yeah.
Can you remember the words then? Cristo, what is
Cristo
it?
Cristo Labrigado, tanto mucho, che amici, parasol.
And it's got Obrigado in there, which is Portuguese as well.
Is it?
Yeah, Obrigado. Wow.
And then it kind of segues straight into Mean Mr. Mustard. John, because he was often influenced by newspaper articles and TV reports. This one was apparently a newspaper article about a chap who used to hide £5 notes in his rectum. So I'm guessing this
so funny,
is probably from the News of the World or The Sun.
Me, Mr. Mustard, sleeps in a shop. He never stops. He's a go-getter. Takes him out to look at the Queen.
Bum, 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 bum.
Only place that he's ever been.
Bum, bum, bum.
Something, something, something obscene. He's just a dirty old man.
And now we know why.
When you realise that the money was in his rectum, you realise why he's a dirty old man. Thank you for pointing that out to me, Chris.
Moving on from...
Ruined the song forever.
Moving on from that to a song about a prostitute, Polythene Pam.
Mm. Well, you don't know whether he speaks from experience or what. I can't remember the lyrics to that.
You should see
Polythene Pam. She's so good looking that she looks like a man.
You should see her in drag in a polythene bag. You should see Polythene Pam.
Yeah.
But it's that old 50s... Liverpool sound, and I think there was a friend they had in the Cavern days called Polythene Pat.
Didn't know that. I just remember liking the guitar sounds in it because they were quite what I call sort of rock, progressive-y rock type sound. Da 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 da, you know, that kind of. I quite like that as a contrast to the Here Comes the Sun type guitars.
Yes.
So much diversity on one album, amazing.
And that segues straight into She Came In Through the Bathroom Window.
Oh, I love that. Came in through the bathroom window. Sorry for me singing it.
No, go for it.
But I've just have to protected by a silver spoon. I mean, what is that all about?
Apparently.
Go on.
Apple Scruffs, the Beatles fans.
I know, yeah, the Apple Scruffs, yeah.
There was a key in the back garden. So
and they
fans
found it and they gone in, yeah.
And appropriated.
Well, the time that I stayed there as a young girl when we went to the Abbey Road sessions, it was a nightmare. I mean, I was terrified because you couldn't walk across the front courtyard without being literally jumped on by all these mostly women.
Really?
Mm, who later became known as the Apple Scruffs, but it was pretty frightening, actually.
Would you had met Martha, would you, the dog?
Yeah, I knew Martha.
Oh, bless.
I have a daughter called Martha. But when my daughter Martha, when I took her down to Paul's farm when she was a little girl, and Paul started singing to her, "Martha, my dear, you have always been my..." And she went, "Oh, you know that song as well." And he went, "Know it? I wrote it." Because everyone sang it to her when she was a little girl. She didn't know why. Yeah. Of course, she just thought Paul was just another person singing this well-known song to her.
Fantastic. And now we move on to the final swan song for the whole career, really. I guess Golden Slumbers.
Once there was a way to get back homeward. I mean, and the orchestration on that is just George Martin's job there, as usual. Fantastic. But Golden Slumbers, fill your eyes, smiles awake you in your eyes, sleep pretty darling, do not cry, and I'll sing a lullaby. It's a very old lullaby lyric, as you know. And to be able to put that into something so modern and, you know, the zeitgeist of the day, I think only Lennon-McCartney could do that, get away with it.
Yeah.
Without it sounding cringy or corny, really. Yeah. Beautiful. That is my favourite off the album.
Paul was saying he had the chord sheets to him, obviously he couldn't read music, so basically wrote his own tune and then rearranged the lyrics.
Yeah, I can read a good chord though, but what a song, lovely. Absolutely gorgeous.
Because it was used on the advert, wasn't it, the John Lewis advert this year. Thoughts?
All I can say is, who owns the publishing? I can't believe Paul gave permission for that.
There was a big outcry.
They had the chords wrong. Well, it's a different version, and it is, to be fair, on the elbow, is it? To be fair on that group, that is their arrangement of the song. You can play what chord you like, but for me, listening to that, it made me, it was the wrong chords for a start. And it's a heinous crime, using a Beatles song in any kind of advertising.
Yeah.
There, I've said it.
Totally agree. Absolutely. Especially John.
And, you know, next we'll be having Carry That Weight for Weight Watchers. You know, please, you know, stop already.
Carry That Weight. It's pretty simple, does its job, but it's so powerful after all the heart-wrenching of Golden Slumbers. And boy, you got to carry that weight.
Carry that weight a long time. And the guitars come back in, reprise that nice guitar sound that they had, those arpeggios, don't they?
Yeah.
From the previous track.
You Never Give Me Your Money.
That's nice. It's a nice little recurring thing that happens there. Lovely arrangement, great song. Oh, that's my favourite off the whole album.
Ringo's first drum solo. You've got Paul George and John Paul and George.
John Paul and George, yeah. You nearly said Pete Best there.
Oh, no. Pete Best and Stuart Sutcliffe doing a bass solo. What an ending to just a sheer rocker, just to say, bye everybody, thanks for all the fish.
But then you've got Her Majesty. Doesn't that come after that?
Yeah.
Dum, 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 dum. Her Majesty's a pretty nice girl. She doesn't have a lot to say. Her Majesty's a pretty nice girl, but she changed from day to day. I want to tell her that I love her a lot, but I gotta have a belly full of wine. Her Majesty's a pretty nice girl. Today I'm gonna make her mine, oh yeah. Today I'm gonna make her mine.
Boom. And the note doesn't end. There's no final note. because originally that was going to be plopped in the middle of the segue between Mean Mr. Mustard.
Was it?
Yeah, the very first note of Her Majesty. You've got that.
Yes.
That is the last note of Mean Mr. Mustard.
Now, you see, you're an editor, so you know these things.
Geek. That's my problem. So, overall, how would you say this album has touched you? What are your feelings about it?
Well, put it this way. When I knew I was coming on here today, I thought, I better listen to the album because I haven't honestly heard it for, it must be, 18 years. I mean, obviously you hear tracks on the radio. I haven't put it on, I haven't listened to it. I just haven't been busy having children and a career. And I can honestly say, I remember every word and every bass line, every little tinkle of every track. So I must have played it constantly for 2 years. For it to go into the back of my memory like that, it's seared into my memory, like so many Beatles songs are for so many people. So it was quite a revelation to realise that I knew these songs inside out, and I hadn't heard it for such a long time. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Kate. Again, Kate can be found on Twitter as @KateRobbins. And to keep up to date with these podcasts, go to iamtheeggpod.com or follow on Twitter @IamTheEggPod. Thanks very much, Kate.
Thank you.
We would shout and swim about the coral.